The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for being here. Oh, my goodness, it's always a pleasure to know that here we are, and it's Wednesday again, and we are lining and looking at the ideas of intentional spirit. And so what we know for sure and what I love about this show is it reminds me every week of what it's like to be intentional. Intentional super exceeds goals and vision boards and, you know, all those beautiful tools that we all use. But to be intentional means you keep going in a forward direction. You're not waiting on external things in your life to work out. You're not waiting on the kids to go to college. You're not waiting until you fall in love again or until your best person or your spouse or whatever, till you leave them and get another. You are about being intentional right now. And I love that. I think that things like perfectionism and excuses is what keeps a lot of dreams from ever being realized. Well, that is not the case today. I already can tell that this guy's energy is going to be off the chart, because when I start out off the chart, that means I am intuitively feeling the guest. So, Mike Anthony, it's all your fault. Welcome to our show today.
Hi, Temple. Thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, I am just so tickled to have you. And, you know, you bring just a life of storytelling and spending all those years as a bartender. What an experience it must have been to be in one of the surrounded by one of the most talked about Broadway musicals ever, Hamilton. Just kudos to all of you, because it did take all of you to, you know, have those experiences, and we are all better people for it. But we are here today because you have learned a lot of secrets about life, and I am so excited for you to tell us all about that.
Yeah, I had quite an experience after my dad died that completely changed my sense of reality, of what life is and death is, and really just it has altered the entire spectrum of my existence. So just to backtrack a little bit, I'm an actor and a bartender, and that's my day job, bartending at Hamilton. But before all of that, I had intended to be a science teacher. I went to college to be a high school science teacher. And you know what science, what mainstream science says about death is very clear. You know, they say it's unequivocal that consciousness is an effect created by the brain. It's just an illusion created by electrical and chemical reactions happening in our brains. And when the brain stops getting oxygen, that's the end of the story. And though I've never entirely believed that, you know, I've always had a sense that there's a lot more going on than meets the eye and than our scientific instruments can reach. When my dad died, I was being crushed by every lecture any biology professor had ever given me. You know, all I could think about was the possibility that he truly did disappear forever. And that thought was just, you know, it was like getting hit in the head with a brick. It really, I was having, not just me, but my family as well, we were having trouble, you know, wondering what the point to anything could be. If someone as amazing as my father, my dad was a real special guy, and we were very close. And if someone as incredible as that could just be gone instantaneously, as though he'd never been here before. You know, why am I going to leave my apartment today? What's the point of doing anything at all if we entirely just disappear and we're just a blip on the infinite radar of time and space of the universe, you know? So that's the place that I was in when my father, no longer in a body, made it his absolute mission to make sure that I knew my biology professors did not have the whole story. And that's what he did.
Oh, gosh. I absolutely love this. And what year did your father die?
2011, so 10 years.
2011. Yeah, it is something. I remember when my dad died, I was 40-something. And I remember going, I don't think I'll ever feel the same again. I remember that I, like the cavity of my heart, that chest, it ached. And I used to think, Mike, that those were just country music songs and they sold more copies because the more heartache they could talk about, you know, the better they would sell. But I was living in that experience of realizing that I had a physical heartache. I mean, it was such a deep woundology inside of me. And I had, and I'm, you know, unity and metaphysical and know that nobody really dies and all that. But it took a little while emotionally to move back to what I really knew and to open up, you know, to my dad talking to me and everything. But anyway, I'm just saying I don't think we ever know how somebody else feels, but I definitely relate. I was just so excited to talk to you today because the conversation that you have in your book, Love Dad, is so necessary for children, for families to read, because we are so duped in this little tiny speck of the universe being told that it's over, you know, and all that. Because it's, in a way, I guess it's just beginning, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, what I ended up learning through my journey, and it was a long journey, you know, it unfolded over the past decade, culminating in an event, which I write about in the book, that let me know without a doubt, 100%, we are more than our bodies and science is wrong. I witnessed something happened to me that was unequivocal. You know, it was there were no shadow areas. There was no interpretation about this. It happened, and the people that I was with saw it happen with me. You know, it was a real, an objectively real event. And when that happened, I realized that the entire time that I'd been experiencing things that felt to me like real, genuine evidence that my dad had survived the death of his physical body, my mind kept on going back to all of these scientists that I've looked up to for my whole life. You know, I'm someone who has great respect for the human intellect and what the brain is able to do and what we've been able to accomplish with it. And the fact that so many people much smarter than me, you know, I mean, I'm a bartender, right? I'm a guy of average intelligence. People much smarter than me are telling me in every science book I've ever read that I must be missing something when I think I'm getting evidence of my dad's survival. Somehow I must be being fooled. But when I had the final experience that I had, I now know without question that no matter how smart those scientists are, no matter how many Nobel Prizes might be sitting on the shelf behind them, if they say there is nothing beyond death or that consciousness is created by the brain and confined by the skull, I know that they're wrong about that. So yes, I think that you're right. It's so important to get this information out there because at a fundamental level, it changes everything, right? It means because what I now know to be true is true, it means that the fundamentals of our science are incomplete. you know, the very foundations upon which most of our science is built. Though it's great for everyday things, you know, it's great for making high-speed trains and making computers and landing probes on Mars and doing all of this amazing stuff at a macro level. When it gets down to the actual fundamental level of where the universe comes from, what it's made from, how it operates, we just don't have those answers. So for science to be so authoritatively telling people in college classrooms all over the world that there's no evidence for life after death, or that there's no evidence for, quote unquote, psychic ability or ESP or anything psi related, you know, it's just they're just wrong about that on such a major front, on such a major front. We are giving out incomplete information.
And that's why it's so important that, you know, successful people like you, you know, come forward. You know, many people have been saying this for forever, but people tend to, you know, because they might dress a certain way or be a certain way or be from a certain ethnic group, they go, oh, yeah, that's woo-woo. That's not, you know, that's not really true. But I can't imagine that, you know, I can't imagine that we live in 2021. And first of all, people don't know that we're here time and time and time again. And just like we teach here, you know, energy never dies. You might be kind of surprised to hear that I literally have a team that every night at the end of the night when I'm calling into, because I believe in the sleep state, that's like when the day's beginning, you know. And so I honor a lot of things and, you know, Saint Germain and Sai Baba and, you know, Creator and all that. But I have a team of people that are, some are well known, some are not, but people I've known in my life, and they are dead as far as physically, but they're on my team. And I call them in every night and I say, thank you for helping me, you know, and supporting me. And, you know, and I'm as serious as the day is long. I do have been doing that for a very long time and have been communicating with friends that have died, individuals that have died. They come through on phones. Some of them give me the code of their birthday. I mean, there's a very active life. And I love that that's your call. It's like, wake up, people. There's a whole world that's going on that you've been misled and duped and, you know, driven to all these things and the fear of death, because if you're afraid to die, you're afraid to live and you take drugs and then you do this. And it's just the whole thing. It's just so when someone like you like trailblazes and goes, here you go. I mean, I know a woman author, we've featured her a lot. The two of you ought to get together, Jamie Turndorf. Her husband died in Italy. He comes through on her computer all the time. They love Paris. She'll just be giving a workshop and the big old picture of the Eiffel Tower comes through on her computer. Wow. So it's like, it's so cool. And your work is necessary. And we just barely have made a dent in people listening and people understanding and opening up to it. It's like I say, you know, it's like social media. If you don't engage with those connections you have, they're not there to you. And that's the same as people that are on this bell. If you don't engage to them, they have died. But if you engage, they are alive. There's that consciousness. Anyway, enough of that. Just know that I love what you're doing. And anything I can do to help, I'm in. Because it's so
that.
Necessary. It's going to expand humanity. And I think we'll all double and triple our life expectancy because we won't be living in an unnatural state. To me, we live now in an unnatural state. We are not aligned with the presence of what is nature to us and what is natural. And you are part of that change. So I'm clapping for you right now.
Well, yeah, I completely agree with you that, you know, one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing now is talking with people and interacting with people who have had near-death experiences, you know, so people who have been clinically dead and then have gone on to have the most real realer than real experience of their lives. And one of the things that they always say, and Dr. Bruce Grayson just wrote about this in his new book called After, is that not only are they not afraid to die anymore, they completely lose the fear of death. They also lose the fear of life, which is what you just said. And I think that's the important part of this whole thing, is when you're not so focused anymore on the end of the journey itself can now be focused on. You know, if you're not worried so much about how it ends, you can have a good time getting there, because you're not worried about where it's headed. You know where it's going eventually, and now you can just enjoy the ride. And there's got to be a reason, in my opinion, that we come here, and as you also mentioned, we come here time and time again, and the scientific evidence for that is extraordinary. If anyone doubts, they can go and look at the University of Virginia's work. It's exemplary. It's astounding. There's a ton of it. And there's got to be a reason, I think, that we keep coming back here time and again for learning or whatever it is. And if we don't have the end of life as something that's constantly sort of on our minds, even in the background, maybe we can get some more learning done because we're able to focus more on the moment. So I agree with you completely that it's just really important information to put out there.
Did you go through any process, you know, to say, here I am, my name is Mike Anthony. By the way, everyone, you can go to MikeAnthony.com and engage, and it's got some wonderful videos and things also, and to buy the book right away. We must be part of the change, as Gandhi has said, and what we know. Did it take... I know the first time I talked about being an alcoholic, I was very sweaty. And the first time I talked about being gay, I was like almost fainted, but nobody else died and I didn't either. But did you go through anything, like any kind of hesitancy? Did you know right away this is yours to do? I always love the story behind the story. Was there any kind of process with you being an author and all of that?
There's some minor hesitancy, in that like what I wrote about at the very end of the book, again, the experience that I had is so far beyond what the average person, thinks of as possible, that I did worry they might get to that part of the book and then think, oh my gosh, this guy's just nuts. And then discount everything else I've ever written. But the hesitancy was minor. I've been blessed with a family that is incredibly supportive, and they were behind me 100% as I took this particular journey, and they were experiencing these things right along with me, so they knew that I wasn't just losing my mind. You know, they were having these experiences as well. I do sometimes now. I'll be whispering. I'll notice. I'll be out at like a coffee shop talking about things like this, and I'll get to the word ectoplasm, and I'll have to whisper that word and things of that nature. But by and large, you know, yeah, I'm out. I'm an open book. Life at Hamilton, which is the first book that I wrote, I'm very open about my life and my feelings and all of that stuff. It feels like this is what I was supposed to be doing. You know, it really feels like I'm sort of the I imagine myself as sort of like the everyman sort of a guy, just this average human being, who can act maybe as sort of a bridge in some cases between people who might be on the very skeptical end of the spectrum and the truth of the matter. I feel very comfortable talking about this stuff now, by and large. And it's the truth. You know, so now I've gotten to the point where there are certainly people I've come into contact with that it's not long before I realize that I'm not much progress is going to be made here. You know, some people have a wall up. that is impenetrable for whatever reason. And this stuff is not able to get through. You know, you were mentioning before about, you know, the frequency sort of all of this stuff. And I do think there is something to this, that if you alter your energy and your frequency, it can make it easier for these people who are not in a body anymore, who are obviously operating now at a different frequency, perhaps a higher frequency, it can make it easier for that contact to be made, I think, you know. And so for some people, they just have, for whatever reason, they have this shell, perhaps, that they're in when it comes to certain topics. And that shell is just not going to be gotten through in this lifetime, maybe. And so for people like that, I just say, well, I mean, absolutely to each their own. I'm not trying to obviously force this stuff on anybody or convert anybody to anything. I'm just saying, listen, your life could be happier if you knew about some of the stuff that is true, that is out there, that there is evidence for. It could make things easier in your life. So that's where I am at this point.
You know, it's funny, the evolution for people like us that become more and more public, or more and more, if you will, just living out loud and unedited. I like to call it just an unedited life. Just like, you know, you're not thinking about, I mean, I have come a long way from being the what somebody liked is what I talked about. Do you know what I mean? Or what somebody's comfort level was, and being the chameleon. And now it's funny, I have that same thought. Like, they're probably going to, you know, I go, what if they think I'm crazy? And now it's like, I hope they do. That's such a compliment. You know, it's such a compliment, because it's wonderful, because it means you're like, oh my God, what a concept, like being original. What a concept, to be original. I mean, isn't that what it's really supposed to be about? It's absolutely it's fascinating for sure. But I love that you've kind of walked everybody through the process, because to me, you're also giving some people out there that are on the fence, that aren't ready to come out about whatever they believe. And I think it helps to tell those stories, because it heals that visionary shadow, you know, that hesitancy. So, you know, good for you. And your excitement is measurable. I just love it.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, you know, I've always been a pretty happy guy and a pretty optimistic guy, you know. But after, now that I've had the experiences that I've had, the experiences that my father has given to me, this amazing gift that my dad has given us, I'm happier even than I've ever been. I feel lighter than I've ever been. And that was the whole reason that I wrote the book, and I started making the documentary and started talking about it more and more, is because I felt like it wasn't fair to keep this kind of thing to myself. I mean, this is the sort of information that should be available for anyone to have if they want it. Because again, people, you can be living a lighter life and a happier life if you're open to investigating the stuff that's out there. And again, you know, I spend a lot of my time talking mostly to people who are probably more on the skeptical end of the spectrum, which is fine with me, because I totally understand people who require evidence. All that I'm saying is the evidence is out there. You may just not have noticed it or looked in the right places for it. And for various reasons, it tends to be kept out of the mainstream circles, even in academic circles. But it is there. And if you take a look at it, in my mind, any open, rationally minded person who looks at the evidence that is out there cannot come away without being changed by that evidence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When we come back after break, I want to ask you some ideas and some thoughts that I've had about, because I want to hear you highlight a little bit more about a vibration of receiving and, you know, that kind of thing. I think that's very interesting, and healing and forgiving and what that could look like. I find that very exciting. But I think people like you and Jamie and Raymond Moody, you know, Life After Death, and some other people that I know that are on the circuit, or like Evan Alexander, I think y'all all need to get together and just funnel this concept, really, and, you know, make films about this. I mean, we need good movies about this and good documentaries about this, because it's so needed. It's so, you know, necessary. We've got to get to more shows other than, you know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, and boy gets girl back, or, you know, let's shoot up and bang up. We need some of this information out there in a larger way. I want to thank all of you for tuning in. I just continue to appreciate you as an audience, and appreciate you sharing our shows with other people and your network. It certainly means a lot. You can go on firstunity.org and find out our playground and different things that we're about. It's people like Mike that we love to bring in and have lectures and series, and our institute. We love to teach people a much broader way of life, and you can find all that information on our website. I also appreciate you visiting me at templehaze.com. And we love hearing what you love to hear about. And I know you're having a ball today, because I know I am. And it's funny when we're talking about that dying people don't really die. Mike, it's like I feel like I've had a cup of espresso already. So I'm thinking there's a lot of people in my office right now, though I can't see them. But they're all here going, yay, we need this information to get out there. And I'm not kidding, and I'm not being facetious. I am being as real as it gets. So everybody, I want you to tune in on Mike Anthony, go to his website, learn more about him and, you know, what he's doing, and get on this trip with us. Living people never die. That's just the absolute factual truth of it. We'll be right back after this break.
All are welcome. We're glad you found us. Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
Welcome back, everyone, and thank you so much for being here. And we are talking to Mike Anthony today. You can go to his website, Mike Anthony. He obviously has other things. He has the book Life at Hamilton. But today we're kind of tuning in on the book that's very important, you know, to his heart, and important for our world at large. And the title is Love, Dad: How My Father Died, Then Told Me He Didn't. Wow. Imagine that. Feel that in. And, you know, Mike and I were talking during break. I mean, our hope and knowing is that the more people have these conversations and the more people wake up, the more this will start, happening. And even if you're like from like following scripture, I mean, Jesus said, in my house, there are many mansions. Excuse me. There's many windows in which we never die. And we are alive in all those dimensions. So Mike, again, it's a pleasure to have you. And I'm sure the book is, it's already a tremendous success. And I'm glad that in some way we get to be part of it. One of the things that I've been, that I think about, because, these ideas I have felt since I don't know when, you know, since I'm going into 20 or something, or I always felt like, you know, living people never died. And I remember having one of the first cars that you have the screen, that things would show up on the screen. On this particular car, you could enter dates, you could enter birthdays and things as reminders. It was a Buick Riata. It was kind of unique. And I remember down the road, late one night, I was talking to my grandfather, and I said, if you're alive, show me a sign. If you're still alive. Now, he had been gone a long, long time. But, you know, I want to feel your presence. I want to know you're right here with me. And bam, on that calendar, it lit up, and it had my name and my birthday in that second. Bam. You know, wow. I've had my relatives speak to me, guide me, show me things. I just love it all. But the question that I wanted to ponder a bit with you is, I have noticed in my life, if I have some undone stuff with a person, so let's just say dad, because hopefully I don't have much undone stuff with people, but with my dad, I did. What I observed is when I cleared that up, when I cleaned that up, that's when he started coming. Do you, in your studies, in your research, because you've done a lot with this, what do you think about that?
Yeah. So now we'll get it. This is sort of more my instinct on all of this stuff. This is stuff that science won't be able to help us with too much. You know, who knows how the mechanics of exactly how all of this works? I was lucky in the fact that my dad and I were incredibly close. And thank goodness. I mean, the very last words we said to each other were, "I love you." But I have been in contact with many people who did not have that, they may have been in a situation where they were even fighting, for instance, you know, like, sadly, maybe the last words they even said out of just anger, is, "I hate you," you know, and which is a terrible thing for a person to have to go through and to feel, especially if you think there is no life after death, and then you're stuck thinking that that's the last words that you've ever said and that person will ever hear. It's now my belief that our loved ones on the other side, for lack of a better word, because I don't really know that there are sides. I think that really this is just a broad spectrum, and we're in our spot on the spectrum, our frequency level of the spectrum, and they're at their frequency level of the spectrum. And the only thing that separates us are those vibrations, the difference in vibration. That's my own personal sort of take on this, but we'll say the other side just for the sake of ease. My sense is that when people are no longer in a human brain, which is an amazing thing, a human brain, right? It's an amazing apparatus, but it is physical in nature, and it is used to navigate very successfully, usually, this physical world. But what we're talking about is consciousness. And in my view, given the evidence that I've now seen, consciousness is something that exists outside and independent of the human brain. And as many people have said and used this analogy, it's my now conclusion that the brain acts in a sense as a receiver, as like a radio receiver, that tunes in to pick up our whatever frequency our individual consciousness is. And it is inside of the brain, apparently, that things like anger and jealousy and all of these negative things, quote unquote negative things, happen. I believe that those are generated on this side of the brain side of things. And people who have near-death experiences, which is, again, a thing I'm fascinated by, and we now have thousands upon thousands of case reports of near-death experiences. People say quite often that when they die and they come out of their body and their brain is now, you know, clinically dead, there's no discernible brain activity in their brain. If, for instance, they're in the middle of an operation, so they're hooked up to all of the monitoring equipment, so we know there's no cardiac or brain activity. People say that they have an experience unlike any they've ever had before. There are no more limits on their thinking. Their thinking becomes hyper clear. Everything suddenly makes sense. And something they never talk about often are things like anger or fear. You know, they're having this experience of bliss often and unconditional love. And we use the words unconditional love a lot. But I think as a human being, while we're operating through a human brain, I think it's really hard to practice actual unconditional love, right? That's not easy to do inside of a human brain. But people who die and are no longer in a human brain and are now experiencing from this expanded perspective, they talk about now actually knowing what unconditional love feels like. And they understand the reasons why a person who maybe was hurtful to them in their lives, they sometimes can understand what made that person be that way. They can understand that they were hurt somewhere down the line, and that ended up rippling out into more hurt coming through them. So all of that is to say that it's my sense that our loved ones, even if we've had a strained relationship with them on this side while we were both together experiencing through human brains, even if that relationship has been difficult, from what I've been told through mediums, so again, this is not scientific, this is just my experience, this is anecdotal, the mediums have said that our loved ones do not hold on to that stuff. And they are there now, open and waiting to connect with us. So like you said, once we clear that up, because I think they also understand on the other side that it is our right while in a human brain to be angry, to hold these resentments. It's just natural. It's part of being a human being. And once we can work through those things ourselves, that might raise our frequency enough to be able to connect with these people. Because another thing that people who have died say is that these emotions are lower frequency emotions, things like anger, guilt, etc., fear. These things are things that slow us down, slow our vibrations down. And when we're vibrating at a lesser level, a slower, a lower frequency, from what I've been told from people who are spirit people who claim to be spirits through a medium that I sit with every week, in order for them to make contact with us, they need us to sort of raise our vibrations a bit. And they say that they actually have to slow their vibrations down a bit to meet somewhere in the middle. So given all of that, it could totally make sense to me, what you said, that once you cleared out some of the issues that you had, then you found yourself making more contact. That could help explain why something like that might happen.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. And I guess one of the things that surprises me is why it's not so common. It's like anything else. There's a new awareness about it. The 4-minute mile, here we go. You know, the healings that people can have, here we go. You know, the power of homeopathy and things like that. Okay, here you go. I don't know. It just seems to me like this is my own perception, of course, from my own window, but more and more activity is starting to happen about this conversation. Like I said, Eben Alexander, many other writers. There's a new friend in Santa Barbara that his book is getting ready to come out, in Simon Schuster, where people can travel with the consciousness of the person dying. That's somebody you need to know. If you email me at templehaze@gmail.com, I'll send you the information of these people, because it's powerful, the conversation, the language, the things that could happen with critical mass, with other people joining together too. Yeah. Because, you know, for some people, it's this is everyday language, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And it could be more common ground. But in some cases, more has more power, you know, just like the secret, you know, everybody's secret. It's like, of us, vision board and those kind of things, it's like, okay, that's not new. But for the world of having a bunch of people coming together at the same time, saying the same things, but in their own language, it was transformative. So anyway, that's what keeps showing up with me, that I think that to join forces with others too would be really powerful, because this is I think this is going to awaken in a greater way the heart of our humanity, and we could use that.
I, Yes, yes. I definitely agree with you that it seems to me that this is at the forefront more so than it had been of the zeitgeist, sort of. It's sort of just in the air. And I feel it's my own instinct, my own intuition tells me that as a planet, we've probably gone through cycles over and over again. If we look at back at, you know, the Tibetan Book of the Dead or the Egyptian Book of the Dead, I mean, there have been cultures in the past who have been very connected to this idea that there's much more than the world that we experience through our senses, our five senses. It's only fairly recently in as far as human history goes that we've gotten sort of cut off from that aspect of things, right? We started to revere science. And as I've said, I love science. I'm a big fan of what science has accomplished. But one of the downsides that I see to science is that it has maybe cut us off in some senses from these awarenesses of more than this physical world. I think we've probably in the past had times when, as a planet, we've been more connected to those things. But once the Industrial Revolution happened and science, because there was a long period in our history when scientists were in danger, when the church held quite a lot of sway, when Galileo, as everyone knows, he looked through his telescope and he said, uh-oh, looks maybe like the sun is not going around the earth, and the church did not like that at all. And he was, put under house arrest and threatened with execution and all of that. And so science had to go underground for a long time. And then in the Enlightenment, science began to hold more sway. And then once science became sort of the victor, for lack of a better word, over religion, and I don't really like putting it that way, but scientists no longer had to hide. In other words, they were no longer, the church could no longer take a scientist and put them under house arrest. Once science came more to the forefront, I think scientists, even to this day, maybe they might have a fear of going back to a time when, quote unquote, superstition ruled the day. So I think there's probably a whole lot of psychology going on to all of this and deep-seated fears. And I think that may be one of the reasons why science has been sort of so cut off from the spiritual side of things, and why great scientists today who are looking into this stuff and coming up with fantastic results, proving to them that the mainstream scientific materials paradigm is incorrect, those scientists are still facing a very much an uphill battle getting this stuff out into the mainstream. And I think that might be why, that they're still sort of fighting against this issue that they had in the past, where science was sort of held under the thumb of other institutions. So I think that we're now at a point, I think you're right, where things are starting to shift. This is more in the air. There are better documentaries happening about this. There's this whole UFO thing that's happening
now. Oh, that's weird. And, I was just getting ready to say that. Uh-oh, you're in my brain now. Here we go. You're in my brain. Telepathy. I was just getting ready to say that. I attended a class. I was 21 with a nuclear scientist, and he gave a talk and said at the time that the government knows that UFOs are real, but they wouldn't disperse the information because they did not feel the American population could handle it. And that, people would flip out or, whatever. And now look at it, look at, it's in the news. It's like, oh, we thought we saw one, did we? I mean, you're right. But, and not to just totally take over, but what were you going to say about that as well?
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that I think the fact that this is becoming much less taboo and that people are openly talking about it now, including military officials, I think that's going to have an effect on our consciousness at large, our consciousness in general. You know, once we say, once officialdom admits that there are things in the sky, in the ocean, that we do not understand, that operate in a way that completely defy what we thought the laws of physics were. And of course, they're not defying the laws of physics. They're simply telling us we don't know what the laws of physics are yet. And that is a really fascinating place to be in history when we are admitting, oh, wait a minute, apparently we don't know how the universe works because these things are doing things that we thought were impossible. So once, you know, as Lewis Carroll wrote in Alice in Wonderland, you know, I sometimes have believed as many as six impossible things before breakfast. Once we allow one impossible thing to enter our consciousness, I think it will tend to open up our consciousness in many other ways as well. And, you know, I'm very involved, very interested in this whole UFO thing. My good friend is Leslie Kane, who is the New York Times journalist who broke the Pentagon story in 2017, and she's now, you know, all over the story. So I spend a lot of time in my daily life looking at this stuff. So there does appear to be, you know, these things are not necessarily physical craft all the time. I mean, some might be. Some appear to be something else, and it appears that consciousness is involved in this whole thing. Consciousness might help create some of this stuff. So, yeah, I think that this topic is going to really sort of be a watershed moment for the expansion of our consciousness and awareness in general.
Yeah, absolutely. It's time. I celebrate that. And I'm going to be able to say, I knew that guy when I was sitting in my office. It was May the 19th, and he was just talking away. And now look at what has happened. I just hold that and want to see that as true. I think that's just really powerful, you know, of what is possible. I was reflecting upon... because James Van Praagh he's more than an acquaintance of mine. But you know, he's a psychic medium, and you know, he advised the TV show Ghost Whisperer, right? Mm-hmm. You remember, you're a lot younger than the rest of us. And if you don't remember, please don't even say it. Do you remember Ghost Whisperer?
I remember because I know Alison Dubois, who is the real life medium that it was based on. I'm familiar with her, so I do know the show. Yes.
Okay, because that, you know, that had that flair with Jennifer Love about the experience. It's different than what we're talking about, but at least it highlighted, you know, that the spirits were still around. The consciousness of the people were still around, and it was wonderful. You know, for 5 years, it did very well. But these are just exciting times that we're living in, and you know, hold the course, because the glass ceiling is being broken a lot. You know, and we need it. We need to get over this brand new, you know, human-made 12th, 13th century story that we live in a box and this is it, and this is all we'll ever have. We've got to get back to ancient teaching and knowing and that level of connection. We use such a small portion of our mind, and we limit ourselves when we do that. And any conversation like this is expansive, you know, and it, mm-hmm. it makes people think out of their everyday structure. It's so necessary.
Yeah, it is, and it's going to really change the world. You know, I mean, there was a great study done. I think I write about this in the book, and I'm forgetting the name of the scientist right now, a psychiatrist, but she did a study about psychic ability, and what she found, ESP. She found when she gave an ESP test So, you know, do you, you know, what do you think this card is? A star, a square, a circle, or whatever. People who came into the test believing in psychic ability did better on the psychic ability test than people who came into it who did not believe in it. So that alone suggests that our own beliefs, our own consciousness, where it is right now, affects how present that sort of thing is in our own lives. So as more and more people start to experience this and it gets more and more accepted, you know, there was just this very well done story about UFOs on 60 Minutes the other night, and it was done without irony. It was done. It was the first time, I think, ever maybe that a news story was done in a very serious way with a very serious tone about this topic. So as these things start to open up in all of our minds, you know, maybe we all become a little more psychic. We become all become maybe a little more sensitive, a little more empathetic. Can feel each other a little bit better. And I think it changes the world for the better.
Well, you know, I was telling you earlier about my friend. She actually was a Unity minister, and I was 30 and she was 40 when she died. And I was saying, I didn't elaborate, but she communicates with me with her birthday 111. It shows up everywhere. What I didn't tell you is 1 year I did a new vision board. And right after that, I was talking to a psychic friend of mine, and she said, you remember that lady that she always comes through? She died when she was young, and she's really close to you. And I went, yeah, Beverly. She goes, she said to tell you that the new car you put on your vision board, you're going to get it, but be flexible with the color. Hello.
Wow.
Come on now. You can't make this stuff up. You know, no. I mean, you can't make it up. I mean, I didn't tell anyone I'd done this vision board. But there you go. Isn't that, that was a new level for me that I had not experienced before.
Yeah, that's so fantastic. And when you have an experience like that, it just really opens you up. It opens up your life. It opens up your sense of what's possible. So I'm so glad that you had that experience. And I, you know, that's really the point of my book is that, you know, reading books is fine and great, but until you have a face-to-face experience like this for yourself, you know, nothing can have the impact of having a direct experience. So I encourage people to go out there and look into this stuff and find, you know, there are a lot of fantastic mediums out there. You don't have to, you know, go to John Edward or one of these super famous people who have 5 years long waiting lists. You know, there are lots of good ones out there. People can go to the foreverfamilyfoundation.org, by the way. All of the mediums on their certified list have been tested using controlled experiments, and they've all been found to have true mediumistic ability, all of the people on that list. So, I want everyone on the planet to experience what you just talked about, to have that experience of, oh my God, this is real. I mean, that'll just change everything.
It does. And you know what? I mean, the ultimate thing underneath, like with your title, Love, Dad, when you know these things and you have these experiences, you're not afraid to love because you can never be hurt. There's no such thing. Mm-hmm. You are not afraid to love. You love everybody with a full heart and you believe in just natural karma. And it's all beautiful. Mike Anthony, you have been a blessing, not only in my life today, but all our listeners. Everyone, go to MikeAnthony.com. Thank you, dear sir, for the work you're doing in the world. Bless you.
Bless you. Thank you so much for all that you do. Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Hey, it's Radley Valentine. Join me for a brand new way of connecting with your angels on my new podcast, The Angel Tarot Show. Each week, you'll meet your angelic guides and guardians and find new ways to unlock unconditional love, tune into your intuitive abilities, and create the joy-filled life that, well, you've always wanted. Plus, you'll get a useful and timely energetic weather report bringing you guidance for the coming week. Tap into the healing, hope, and guidance that's all around you on the Angel Tarot Show, exclusively on mindbodyspirit.fm.